So, does work define us? Or is it just a source of income? Are we born dreamers who just can't stop dreaming? Or have we blindly accepted our fate? My name is Rocco Lungarello. I am a professional writer who has been plagued with these questions from the inception of my career. And though I have been on a personal exploration to find answers, I think it's time to shut off my brain, strike up some meaningful conversations, and find out once and for all that the answers to these questions have always lied within those that surround us. This is Where I Work, a podcast long overdue. So shut off your television and open your ears.
What do you do all day? Like, what's your... So, like, what do you do? What's your job? I love that I'm talking to you about this because you actually have a really good job and you don't have all those issues that, like, a lot of people do.
No, I mean, I'm very thankful for my job.
What's your job title?
Director of Technology.
For?
Shelton Public Schools in Connecticut.
Okay, so what does that entail for someone who has no idea?
So basically, I'm in charge of all things technology in the school district. And so that's not just in the classroom, but that's in the offices and everywhere. And it's not just fixing computers. I think everybody, you know, when I first talked to everybody, they're just like, oh, you fix computers for a living. It's like, I wish that's all I did for a living, but it's a hell of a lot more than that. I mean, it's...
You probably manage people who do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have currently 1, 2, 3, 4 full-timers, 3 interns, and... a consultant,
yeah,
who works for me full time, basically. So I guess, you know, about 8 people,
okay,
who work underneath me, and you know, we all kind of share duties for everything. You know, some people have more areas of expertise, but we work as a team on a lot of things, and we always have each other's backs if we're in the middle of doing something else.
How did you get this job? What was the progression of where you started? Like, after college. Because that story is interesting.
It is.
You went to Providence College.
To be a psychologist. At first, I wanted to be a guidance counselor. And then I realized I'd be horrible at it. So I decided to go... I wanted to be a therapist for a while because I thought I could save the world like most college kids think they can. I had always been a nerd. I was 12 when I got my first computer, and my parents said, if you break it, you fix it. And I broke it, like, within the first week. And my parents were legitimate. They're like, no, you gotta fix it. So I had to fix it, and over time, I had an interest in it. But I remember when I graduated high school in 98, and everyone, like, my family, everyone was like, you should go in for computers, you should go in for computers. And I thought I knew everything, and I was like, well... you know, by the time I get out of school, the supply is going to outweigh demand, and no one's going to... There's going to be way too many IT people and not enough jobs for it. That was stupid on my part. Huh. And I graduated. Back then, even in the late 90s, early 2000s, there's not really, like, IT degrees from a four-year college back then. It was computer science, which is not IT. Computer science is... programming, and I hate programming. I'm not good at it in any stretch of the imagination. So that was the only program they had at Providence, so I stuck with the psychology degree, and I did really want to get into HR by the end of my college career. I really wanted to get into human resources. And the first job I got, I was really excited about. It was a recruiting firm. And I thought that I'd be helping people get jobs, and all I did was cold call 100 companies a day and asked if they needed help hiring anybody.
Oh, yeah. I remember that job.
Oh, my. That was probably... And I was terrible at it, and I got canned after 6 weeks. And that was probably the worst 6 weeks of my entire life. I got one company to ask me for help. Before I had gotten that job, I had applied for a school district just to be in their tech department, and I had interviewed for it. I didn't get the job. 2 weeks later, I got this job as a recruiter, and on a Friday morning, the owner of the company brings me in, and it was a ridiculous conversation. He's like, you know, due to cutbacks, we're going to have to let you go, and I was just like, honestly, I was terrible. Just say you're fired because you're terrible, Dan. And the guy would not say it to me because he was at least trying to be nice about it. But I'd fire me too if I was. I was horrible at my job. I'm not a salesman. And I remember I left that place and I drove home. And there was a message on my answering machine from the school district calling me back. That they wanted me to go back in for an interview that the person... That I had already interviewed for, they called me back. The person that they had hired did not work out.
So oh, no kidding.
That afternoon, I went there for an interview, and I started on Monday.
Really?
Yeah, so I had...
So there was like a... It was like 4 days that you didn't have a job.
It was one day. It was technically one day. Like, I was fired at like 9 a.m. on Friday, and I started that Monday. So it was like I just took a day off.
That's awesome.
So, and it worked out nice, and you know, it was an awesome experience because I learned so much. You know, it was a small department at that time. There were only three of us, and there were
what was it working for?
Monroe Public Schools.
That was that early.
It was Monroe. That was my first IT job, and I was 22.
What was your title?
Just technician.
So how did you finagle a job like that if you have a bachelor's degree in psychology?
They had put an ad in the paper, and I had worked part time in the summers at a local computer repair shop. So I knew that because you can't really call like a computer repair shop part time in the summer like any kind of real experience. So I walked in there the second time and I was like, I'm a blank slate. You can teach me whatever you want. I don't have any preconceived notions about technology and IT in general because I've never really had, a quote unquote corporate IT job before, a business oriented IT job before. It was fixing people's computers that they brought in from their house, and it worked. And you know, they were like, no, that's right. The person who was here before you had been in IT, corporate IT for years. And he couldn't understand that there's a big difference between corporate IT and educational IT.
You come to know what that is now.
Yeah. Right? There's a big difference in corporate IT and educational IT in that a lot of times corporate IT is very specific in the job that you have. So in a big company, one person's job may be nothing more than switches. Another person's job is nothing more than keeping an eye on the backups. Another person's job may be keeping track of nothing more than the email servers. Another person does all the break fixes. That's all of our jobs in educational IT. It's a municipality.
What the hell is a break fix?
Your computer in your office breaks. I'm the guy who comes and fixes it.
Oh, literally, like break. It breaks, you fix it.
Yeah, break fix. Yeah, exactly.
I never heard that.
Yeah,
one.
Just
like kind of like breakfast. But...
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's never a day where you get one call at a time. When something goes wrong, everything goes wrong. It's Murphy's Law. So that's a lot of my job entails, you know, all right, I've got a server down. The superintendent is having a problem with his PowerPoint presentation, and he's about to present tonight the budget to the Board of Education. And, you know, I have a teacher whose computer is broken. All right, I've got two people to fix three problems. What do I do?
So you're in charge of how many schools? There's a lot of them,
there's,
right?
There's five elementary schools, one upper elementary school, which is grade six and five and six. There's an intermediate school, which is grade 7 and 8, and there's a high school. So there's eight buildings, 8 schools, and then there's central office. So technically 9 buildings.
And that's where you work out of? That's where
I'm based out of, yeah.
So basically the first job you got in IT was working for Milford Public Schools or Monroe Public Schools.
Yeah.
And then after that was another school, and then currently where you are is another school.
So what happened, the history is I started off as a technician in Monroe, and about a year and a half after I was there, their current director of technology retired, and they brought in a new director of technology, who really was, he was amazing. His name is Craig. He's still a good friend of mine. He really expanded and he got the role of technology in education. He understood that, you know, it's modern times. And in order for kids to be competitive in the community beyond school, they have to understand technology. And so he really made me understand what is the end game. You know, originally when I first started in Monroe, the end game was just fix whatever is broken. And then when he came on board, I truly started understanding I'm helping the students learn. And that's where I started getting the passion behind it.
Yeah.
Because not to take anything away from people who are in corporate IT, but in corporate IT, you are helping to increase the bottom line or making money for shareholders or stakeholders. And in educational IT, it's more, I'm helping students learn, which is rewarding because I could never be a teacher. I don't know how you were a professor. I really don't. I could not stand in front of 20, 25 kids all day, every day, 5 days a week for 10 months a year. I could never do it. I'd burn out in a year. I just couldn't. So this is my...
I burned out in 3 years.
I could not... this is my way of indirectly helping kids learn. I find the evolution of education absolutely fascinating.
What part of it?
Everything about it. The evolution of instruction itself. The idea that education is always going to be maturing, and you can't have a lesson plan from 20 years ago and expect it to have the same impact on the students. And that, you know, I think a lot of people have a difficult time grasping or realizing that the United States is not number one in the world in education. Maybe they were back in the day. They're not anymore. I don't even think they're in the top 10. Then that's because it's constantly evolving. And it's difficult for people to change with the times. And I think it's a product of the system itself.
Can you see yourself being happy at a job doing corporate IT?
I could see myself I try to be happy at any job I'm ever at, minus being a recruiter for 6 weeks. But I think there would, I would feel like there's something missing if I was in corporate IT.
Because you're not only doing something that you like, but you're also helping drive forward, you know,
the next generation.
The next generation,
like
right?
The people who are...
So you don't have many days where you're like, what am I doing? I'm not doing anything. My life is meaningless.
No, I don't. I honestly, really? To be honest with you, I don't. I never question what I'm doing, or, you know, there were times when I was in Monroe, I questioned where I was because I was frustrated with where I was at that point in my life, in that of my current position. Because my former boss in Monroe, he really pushed the shit out of me. I mean, he pushed me hard.
So he was kind of like a mentor, almost.
He was definitely a mentor, and he never lets me forget it whenever I see him. He always busts my balls, because now I went from mentor to peer. And, you know, the local tech directors, we all get together a lot. You know, we'll talk whether it's shop or we'll, you know, we have ideas and, you know, like there's a bunch of new laws that came out, you know, protection, that there's, you know, the Child Internet Protection Act, and then there's FERPA, and then there's the Freedom of Information Act, and there's a lot of legality behind a lot of that stuff, so we get together to talk about the new laws that are in place, or we get to talk about, you know, Google is getting huge, Google Apps and Education is gigantic. We talk shop, and, you know, there's 10, 15 of us, and he's always, like, he's a big dork, so he calls me his Padawan.
What's that?
That's a term from Star Wars, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that means, like, trainee kind of a thing.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's so funny.
He's like, this is my little Padawan. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm not your Padawan anymore. But he really pushed me hard. And I get why he did it now, because I wouldn't be where I am without him. And without him pushing me to the brink
of it, though. So one recipe, one ingredient for your success is having a good mentor.
Yeah.
The other is knowing that you want to do something that is making an effect. Mm-hmm. What else is there? Because you have to recognize that what you have is not a common thing. Like, you understand, like, when you're talking to people and you're like, oh, how's work? And they're like, dude, it fucking sucks. Like, you understand that that's the common response.
I do. And I have a difficult time understanding that, to be honest with you. I do have a difficult time when people
are
like, work blows. And I think part of it is I try to be positive, and I know that sounds really cliche, but I really try to find the best out of everything. I mean, the way I look at it is wallowing in your own misery does nothing for you. Like, sitting there and just being miserable, what does that fucking solve? That solves nothing. And even when I was in Monroe and Craig was working me to the bone and putting me, you know, 80-hour weeks, and, you know, at one point he banned me and my wife from having kids, kind of a joke, but not really. And I tell him to this day, like, he worked me to the point where there was one day specifically, he lost his shit on me one day. He screamed at me and just berated me, and I had fucked something up bad. I don't even remember what it was. And I remember I walked out of his office and I was shaking because I was so, like, messed up from it. And I got in my car and I got in a really bad car accident.
Seriously?
I got T-boned. I pulled out of the school parking lot and I didn't even look to my left, and there was a car coming to the left. I was turning left and the car came and T-boned the driver's side and blasted my car. You know, it was bad. And I remember it was pouring rain, and he gets... And obviously, he cared, you know, and I called his secretary, Nancy, and I'm like, I just got in a car accident right outside of the building. And obviously, the whole school comes out to see if I was all right. And he comes out, and he gets in the car with me. And the first thing he says is, he goes, you better not blame this on me. And he had, like, a hazmat. I was, like, trying to make light of it. And I looked at him, and I remember thinking to myself, the next time I see you walking across the parking lot, I'm going to hit you with my car. Like, that was the anger and the hatred I had towards him at that time, because I didn't understand what he was doing. You know what I mean? Like, he was pushing me because he saw something in me, and he didn't want me to become complacent.
What was your upbringing like? Maybe that had some kind of effect on your...
Well, my dad was a tile man. I mean, my parents came here from Italy. They were born and raised and met and married in Italy, and then they came to the United States in 68, I think they came.
Not 69?
That's I think my sister was born in... Yes, Adele was born in 69. And my dad was a tile man. He busted his ass.
But really successful.
He's really successful in it. Yeah, he's absolutely... He made a name for himself. You know, to this day, if I meet another tile man just in passing, I'm like, oh, my dad's a tile man, is Elio DeVito, and they all call him Gramps. And they're all like, my God, the shit that your dad does, nobody does it anymore. He's old school. Like, he still does the mud work. He does not cut any corners. You know, he is the best. He's one of the best in the business. He's one of the most expensive in the business. that he's one of the best in the business. And he just, I remember when I was younger, I mean real young, like 8, 9, 10 years old, and I probably shouldn't even be saying this on record, but he used to, I used to say, I want to go make money and I want to be a tile man when I get older. And he'd be like, all right, are you sure you want to fucking do that? All right, let's go. And he'd come in and he'd work me to the bone. He would kill me. I was 9, and he'd make me use the diamond blades to cut the tiles. And he'd make me carry buckets of sand all day. It felt like for no apparent reason. Like he'd have me carry him across a lot, and then he'd have me bring it back to the car. And he'd work me going, and I'd quit at the end of every day. And he'd give me like $10. And I remember every day on the way home, you gonna go to college? Yes, I'm going to college. Yeah, you don't want to do what I do. And so he killed himself. And at the same time, they taught me the value of a dollar. I was 14 when I had my first job at a cleaner's, and then I was working at a deli by 15, and I was working 40 hours a week when I was in high school because I wanted the money. So it was just earn it. And I think it was just, I remember coming in, or I remember, you know, being home and my dad coming home from work, and he would literally come in like almost on all fours. Because, I mean, laying tile, just, you're in positions that your body shouldn't be in. And he would come in on his hands and knees just in just pain. Just sheer and utter pain. And then he'd take me to the job and he'd show me the beautiful work he did. So even though my dad would break his back and hurt his knees and hips, he'd be like, well, look at this montage I did on the wall, or look at this beautiful pattern, or look at how unbelievable it looks, and this is going to be here for the life of this house. So I guess even though he was stressed and, you know, when you own your own business, you depend on yourself for money. You are your own source of income. I have the utmost respect for people who own their own businesses, because I don't think I could handle that kind of stress.
Yeah, it's all on your shoulders.
It's on your shoulders.
Where do you see yourself next?
I don't see myself leaving Shelton for a long time. I really don't. I don't. Why? Why would I need to leave Shelton? I love it. I love it there. I have an unbelievable team. We have a lot of fun. You know, we keep things lighthearted. You know, the one thing, when you're in the service industry, and that's exactly what IT is, we are the service industry, you have to keep things lighthearted. Or else, you know, the places you work for will chew you up and spit you out. And every place I've ever worked for, I've always tried to keep it lighthearted. But to understand that when it's time to get to business, you got to do it. But when you have some free time, have fun.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. You can have fun and work at the same time. You know, and my team, they get that. And we always prank each other. It's been awesome. It's awesome.
That's fine.
There's a lot of pranks. Oh, one of the things that we do to each other all the time, they're called... There's a website called ThinkGeek. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
They have like really weird, geeky things. They have these little chips, these little boards. They're called Annoyatrons. They're this big and they have a little speaker and a switch. And they make sounds. One of them is a cricket. And it's got a magnet on it. So when I first started in Shelton, this is when I knew I would love this place. They hid one in my ceiling. So every 3 or 4 minutes, I'd hear a cricket. For weeks! I had no idea where the fuck it was coming from.
And they planted that?
And they planted it. But they would move it every couple of days. So then it was one day it was under my desk, the next day it was behind my whiteboard, the next day it was in the ceiling, the next time it was behind my table. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And we still do that to people in central office who get on our nerves. We dump the Annoyatron in their office for a couple of days.
So what is so important about having a lighthearted atmosphere at work, and then with the understanding that, like you said, when it's time to get to business, they get to business. But don't you think, I'm just trying to, because I have my own answer, but I wonder what is the value in that, personally, of having an environment like that.
So you got to blow off steam. You don't want people to be miserable where you work. You want people to enjoy coming into work every day. And it's one thing, if it's go time, it's go time. There's nothing wrong with that. But after a while, you if it's constantly serious, people don't care. I don't want people to think of working for me as a job. I want it to be a career for them. Every person who works, who's part of the IT department, I want them to end up becoming a director one day. But I want them to have the same passion as me. And they need to understand that there has to be a balance between go time and play time. And for instance, not a week ago today, right? We got to work and it was good. Bought everybody donuts. We had a meeting. It was all right. You know, we're lighthearted. A lot of times when we're talking things through, we throw football around. You know, because you just talk things through. Sometimes informal conversations are the best ways to figure out solutions to things in IT. You know, we were joking around, sending each other funny texts and stuff. And then at 3 o'clock, 15 servers crashed.
Oh, my God.
Our virtual host crashed, right? So our email server went down. Our student information server went down. Our SQL server went down. Our monitoring server went down. Everything went down. And now two of my people were off that day. They had called me. Dan, I'm not getting any emails. What's going on? What can I do to help? Can I help you? Let's go. Let's conference call. Let's talk this out. So it was immediately, let's do this. So they understand when to flip that switch. Because I allow them time to just blow off. You're still doing work, but you can be lighthearted about it at the same time.
Why do you think some people don't agree with that and they want it to be business all the time? Is it what? It's just like ego, or what's the deal with that? With companies or bosses that operate like that?
You know, that's a question that has irked me for a long time. Part of it is I don't know the true answer to that, because I can't give you an opinion on the corporate world because I've never been in corporate IT before. I worked for Louis Dreyfus for a couple of summers in their finance department when I was in college. And I think it's the culture that they're in, that it's always business, and that it comes down to almost like efficiency. They think if you're being lighthearted, you're not being efficient at what you do.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think that's just, it's too extreme. And I think what I've noticed is, in order to get the best productivity out of people, is to give them some flexibility. When you give them the flexibility, if somebody's happy when they go to work, they're going to do a better job than if they're unhappy. There's a difference between being a boss and being a leader. And the school of thought that I really subscribe to is the concept of being the servant leader.
Meaning
my role...
Meaning you still work with them. You're still in the trenches with them.
My role as the, whatever you want to call it, boss, how can I make your life easier? What can I do to make your life easier? And that's how I approach it with them every single day. You know, when I meet with them on our Friday morning meetings, what do you guys need? What can I do for you? Is there something I could do for you to help alleviate the load? It's not, all right, I need you to do this and I need you to do that. All right, let's break. It's not that. It's what's going on. How are you stressed? How can I alleviate that? And I'm very genuine about it. It's not, I'm not, it's not hallowed. You know what I'm saying? It's not, I'm just saying that because I'm trying to be a good boss. I truly care about them, and I really want to help them and alleviate and make their life as easy as possible. So what can I do for them? And it's not like they're saying, go do my job for me. That's not what they're asking. You know what I'm saying? But what happens with that is it creates a cyclical feedback, a feedback loop, I guess is the word you want to say. Whereas that they'll be like, you know what, Dan? I was thinking about the slowness at the intermediate school. I think we should do this. All right, let's do it. You know, I don't bat an eye. I don't question why they do that. They're in the trenches at that building. That's their building. You think that that's the best thing? Then let's freaking do it. You know what I'm saying? So they're equals to me.
Yeah.
We're a team. I happen to be the quote-unquote boss. That doesn't make me any smarter than them. That doesn't make me any better than them. There are things that they know that boggle my mind. That I am like, I sit there and I am dumbfounded with their knowledge of IT. And I pick their brains. So why am I going to question what they do? And I think a lot of bosses lose touch of that. They think like, well, because I'm the boss, I'm smarter than you and I know more than you. No, you don't. Everybody's smart in their own right. And you should take advantage of that. Use their intelligence, use what they're good at, and make them excel at it even more. The happiest day of being a boss was after I left New Milford. One person, Eric, who worked for me, and I took him under my wing, and I really worked with him, and I said, you know, you've got it. You know, you've got the personality and the technical expertise, and you could become a director yourself. And he is now the director of technology for Derby Public Schools. And that was one of the happiest moments of my professional career, was to see somebody who worked for me, who is now my peer. And it was really such an unbelievable thing to see somebody's potential come into fruition. And I never want to waste anybody's talent.
When you were younger, or not younger, early in your career, you had somebody who was a mentor to you. Are you kind of paying it forward almost?
I don't know if I'd say paying it forward, because paying it forward makes you feel like I was obligated to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But one of the things, I'm in a good position in that... I'm actually very happy that I ended up with my psych degree. I'm not saying I'm a psychologist or a therapist by any stretch of the imagination, but it did help me understand, and it gave me empathy into other people's minds. And I think that's one of the things a lot of bosses lack, is empathy. And really putting themselves, not sympathy, empathy, putting themselves in their employees' shoes and understanding what's going on with them. They just have that, this is the way it is, and that's, I don't understand why anybody else can't see that. Like, no, that's not how life is, and that's not how it should be. We all have different backgrounds, different experiences that bring us to where we are today, and I need to understand that before I can manage you. When I got my first director of technology position at New Milford Public Schools, and I remember for about 2 weeks before I started, I was like thinking about, you know, who am I going to be and what type of person I'm going to be. And at that point, I was going through, like, I read, like, you know, the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and a bunch of these motivational, you know, power phrases books and all that stuff. And the light switch went on for me when I just realized, be you. You know, you can read all of these motivational books and you can read how to change your habits and none of it matters. You have to do what is within the confines of who you are hardwired to be. And if you embrace who you are, you're going to be better at it. Because if you embrace who you are, you're probably going to embrace who other people are.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying? If you accept...
I do.
I have a shit ton of flaws. My God, do I have them. Talk to Melissa. I have a million of them. But I accept them. I work on them. But I'm not going to sit here and read a book and think I'm a new man. I am who I am. And that's just the way I have to move forward with it. It's just be who you are. You can't read a manager book on how to, you can't read a book on how to be a good manager and think you're going to be a good manager.
No, that's like Michael from The Office would do something.
That,
like that.
That's what I'm saying. And there are a lot of people who read all these books, and there are fantastic books out there. The 1 Minute Manager is an unbelievable book. But if you don't have the personality that fits the 1 Minute Manager mentality, then you're never going to be a 1 Minute Manager. And when you try it, it's going to be fake, and your people are going to call your shit out on it. So you got to be who you are. And I, that was the best thing, my discovery moment was just saying, like, you know what? Focus on my strengths and build on my strengths instead of focusing on my weaknesses. Because if you focus on your weakness, you start becoming scared and you start looking over your shoulder and you start thinking of someone's better than me and you know what I'm saying? And then in turn you become a pretty shitty boss because you yourself are scared that you can lose your job at any time.
Just, yeah, total insecurity.
Yeah, insecurity. That's the word I was thinking of. But I think if you just sit there and you look at your strengths and you say, this is what I'm good at, let's make it even better because truth be told, it's a lot easier to make a strength even stronger than to make a weakness a little bit better. In terms of energy expenditure that it takes for you to hone in on a good skill that you have, it takes a lot less effort to make yourself better at something you're already good at. And then you look at it and you hedge your strengths against your weaknesses until your strengths eventually drown out your weaknesses.
Hmm. Do you think you have a balanced life between work, fatherhood, husbandhood? Is that a word, husbandhood? Do you think that you do? Because I would have to, knowing your success and your work and just talking to you and knowing you as a person, that you have a successful career. Without a doubt. You know that, you know, there's no question in that. Do you think beyond that that you have a balanced life in all other respects where you spend time with your family, you take care of yourself, and you know, whatever it is, you maybe it's working out or hanging out with your friends. So if you had to rate yourself, I mean, I know now it's difficult because you have essentially a newborn, mm-hmm. but overall, do you think that you could have such a good career, be an effective boss, and then also come home to a balanced life? Are those two pieces, can they cohabitate?
Yeah, they absolutely can cohabitate. That's not to say there aren't times where they clash, because there's definitely times when they clash. But it's about understanding that there has to be compromise in your life. And the sooner you accept that your life is about compromise, I think the happier you are with your life in general. And your happiness is a subjective term. And I think that the more you are accepting of your situation, the happier you end up becoming. And what I mean by that is I think our culture thrives, and I don't know why our culture is like this, but I think it thrives on perfection. And I think people want exactly what they want, and they get pissed off and miserable when they don't have it. And I don't subscribe to that philosophy, because life is always going to be about a give and take. My job is stressful, don't get me wrong. I mean, there are days where I come home and I am wiped, and I am angry or whatever. I'm not going to say, you know, work is puppy dogs and rose petals. there are some really rough days. And I come home and my son gives me a big hug and, you know, I have my little girl. She's giving me her little gummy smiles without teeth and, you know, it melts it all away. Or there are times where I come home and my son's flopped on the ground having an absolute nuclear meltdown and Gemma's crying and my wife is sitting there going, you gotta take one of them because I can't handle two crying kids at once right now. And, you know, it's like, so you leave one shit show and you end up in another shit show. And by the end of the night, you get both of the kids to bed. And I look at my wife and we just start fucking laughing because it's like, what else are you gonna do?
I'm finding with all the, you know, the interviews that I'm doing, I want to be more like everybody I've interviewed. And you're no exception, you know, like I want to be more like you in my work. So I want to know what you would tell, what general advice would you give to your son and daughter? Let's say you're at their graduation dinner and it's the end of the night, it's like 10:30, you're walking them home and they're about to get ready to go into the workforce. What bit of advice would you give them, knowing everything you know right now?
Be who you are and focus on your strengths. Never compromise your character for somebody that you think you should be. Because the moment you think you should be somebody else is the beginning of your downfall, both in professional and in your personal life.
Dan has a really good outlook on life. You know, he's the type of person that you want to be around. And so his management style, which is founded on empathy and mutual respect, doesn't surprise me one bit that that's the direction he took. He really is a born leader and a genuine person that I'm blessed to have as a friend. So thank you, Dan, for coming on the show. I think the people in Shelton are lucky to have you on board. And I also think that a lot of listeners will find value in the perspective that you've shared. So thanks again. If you enjoyed the podcast, please spread the word. The website for the show is employedpoet.com. All you do is click on where I work. And also episodes are available for download from iTunes. So take care, everyone, and I will talk to you soon.